We've been looking at how the gun lobby has pushed to restrict information about firearms, something that came up a lot during the March for Our Lives rally in Washington last month. Here's Parkland student Jacqueline Corin.
This issue is undoubtedly an epidemic that affects communities of all classes, an epidemic that the Center for Disease Control does not have the funds to research.
Yesterday, we looked at the 1996 Dickey Amendment that cut CDC funding for gun violence research. Today, the TIAA Amendment that backers say protects innocent gun shops, but detractors like former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg say keeps researchers and the public from knowing where guns used in crimes come from. Daniel Webster is familiar with it. He's a professor of health policy and management at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And professor, we want to start there. Bloomberg Philanthropies gave funding to the school, right?
Well, Michael Bloomberg has made a big commitment to public health globally and domestically. And so he's given funds to our school, and we're very grateful for that. The center I direct, the Center for Gun Policy and Research, has received some modest contributions from Bloomberg Philanthropies, but that has not constituted the majority of our funding. Most of our funding is from other foundations.
Well, as you know, that though, is going to immediately taint you in the eyes of gun rights advocates who feel that Mayor Bloomberg is unfairly attacking this amendment. But we will get to that. We'll bring that up again. But before, tell us why you started the research that you did in the 90s, what you found.
Sure. I was very intrigued by some research that was being done, being led by Glenn Pierce, who is at Northeastern University. He demonstrated that a very small proportion of licensed gun dealers, as little as 1%, sold roughly 60% of the guns used in crime. And we know that certain gun dealers sell more guns than others, but it was a very skewed distribution.
Well, let me jump in to say, first of all, that this information about, wow, it's just a few of the stores that sell most of the guns used in crime. It was the 2003 TIAA Amendment, which stopped the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives from sharing that information. What was your thinking when that happened?
Oh, I was very disturbed because I knew from not only the research that I was doing using the same type of data, these are data, just so folks understand what the data are. Mm-hmm. When local police recover a firearm from a criminal suspect or a crime scene, they can share the basic information about the firearm, and ATF will gather the information to trace where that gun initially was sold and when and to whom. So I had done some research looking particularly at the role of a small number of gun dealers and selling guns later used in crime, and then some things that were done to draw attention to those gun dealers, sometimes simply with bad publicity and sometimes with lawsuits or criminal prosecutions brought against them. And when there was some accountability process, you had a notable reduction in the flow of guns coming from those type of gun dealers into the hands of criminals. And just as we were making those discoveries and publishing those data, we found that this TIAA amendment was passed and restricted our ability to obtain that data. So since that time, we've only been able to get a little bit of data here and there from local law enforcement agencies rather than get what we had gotten from the ATF, which is a national database.
Well, look, the Boston Globe has done some terrific reporting on this, and they point out that you can find out the states that some, you know, guns come from. In Massachusetts, it's New Hampshire, Maine, and Florida. But private researchers like yourself, universities, and the public don't have, you know, the data that could show the county or the store. But why would the average citizen need to know that?
Well, I think many gun owners want to know whether to do business with a gun shop or not. But I also think it's a matter of public safety that there should be local pressure when there's a local business that appears to, you know, engage in practices that have an important bearing on public safety. And I've seen this in many different cities. Baltimore, I have the most direct access to, and We once had a gun shop just over the city line that accounted for a very large share of the guns used in crime year in and year out, till eventually the compliance with gun laws were so poor that the ATF finally, after literally a decade, was able to take his license away. We're literally a half a mile away from him. Another gun shop virtually never had a gun show up in crime. So, and, you know, this is a city and a region with a high rate of gun violence, and it seems to me that both citizens and public officials should want to know if there are businesses that are contributing to an important public safety problem.
Sounds like you're saying that, you know, this is something that gun shops should welcome, because, you know, if they could ferret out the one with the bad practices among them, it would be better for their reputations overall.
Yes, absolutely, because their records generally are quite good, and they can distinguish themselves as a safe and responsible gun shop. The only thing that the TR'd amendment did was protect the bad gun dealers. It did nothing to help the good gun dealers, because they didn't need help. The data suggests that, again, most are, you know, comply with laws and are quite responsible.
Well, as you know, it was Todd Tiart, the Republican from Kansas, who initially sponsored this restriction in 2003. He left Congress in 2011. He runs a consulting firm. And at the time, he said the main point of his legislation was to prevent the public release of data on gun owners to protect their privacy, the privacy of American citizens. He also told the Washington Post, "I wanted to make sure I was fulfilling the needs of my friends who are firearms dealers." And the NRA and other supporters of the amendment go a little further. They say that a lot of traced guns are not used in crimes. So, for instance, if somebody has a gun taken away, they give the example of, let's say you bring your gun into an election area where you're not allowed to have them. It might be taken away and traced, but it wasn't really used in a crime, and it might poorly reflect on a gun store when it shouldn't. The NRA also points out that the Fraternal Order of Police is very much against overturning this amendment and public awareness of the tracing of guns, because it can interfere with the work that they do. And they point to former Mayor Bloomberg, who allowed New York City police to get trace data from the ATF, not for a criminal investigation, but for a civil lawsuit. And they claim investigators for that civil lawsuit interfered with sting operations that the ATF was holding. So they say it's got to stay with the ATF, because you'll jeopardize informants and police work. And that's primarily why the information has to stay with the ATF. Your thoughts?
Well, I have no knowledge about whether undercover operations from private investigators hired by Mayor Bloomberg interfered with anything the ATF was doing. I certainly haven't seen that. I want to go to the first issue, that the TR'd amendment protects gun owners. I've never in my entire 25-year career heard of any research with crime gun trace data where the name of an individual gun purchaser or possessor was ever released as part of a research study. So that's simply a red herring and not true. This was done principally, as Representative Tiart said, to protect people who sell firearms. And if you look at the record of Congress in recent years, in recent decades, what you'll find is a very consistent pattern where they are quick to pass laws that protect people who sell guns, but are very reticent to pass laws that protect the public from problematic gun dealers. That was the case with the TR'd amendment, and it was the case subsequently to the federal law that basically prevents lawsuits against anyone who makes or sells guns. Mm-hmm. So Mr. TR was, what was behind and the whole intent of the amendment was to protect people who sold firearms. That's it.
Well, and as we said, he's quoted as saying that.
And I'd also just very briefly, as it relates to New York City doing the undercover things, what they found is, using the trace data, they found the problematic gun dealers, and they did undercover stings and tried to stage blatantly illegal transactions, and a very large share of those individuals are very willing to engage in those illegal transactions. So what was done in that case also really has no relevance to research. Researchers don't launch undercover stings. We simply try to understand what's going on with the data and report that. And I think, again, it's greatly in the public's interest for research to be able to have that information so you can fully understand how guns make their ways to criminals and which policies are most effective in preventing that.
That's Daniel Webster, professor of health policy and management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Professor Webster, Daniel, thank you so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you.